Welcome to This Week in Money. I'm Jim Goddard. Today, Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com runs down the major markets. The American exchanges appear to have rallied with the news. Inflation seems to be slowing down. He checks in on the U.S. and Canadian dollars. Publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom report, Dr. Mark Fauber, talks to us from Thailand about the financial impact of the U.S. midterm elections and how he has never seen Hong Kong investors be so negative before. Veteran BC trader Victor Adair gives us his view on the latest stock market rally, the U.S. and Canadian dollars, and whether China's appetite for commodities will come back. Plus, at the end of the show, we'll have a company showcase update from Recyclical CEO Zarko Maselgia. We'll talk to Ross Clark right after this.
Introducing Recyclical, making lithium ion last forever. Recyclical's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclical Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
Welcome to This Week in Money, the source for market opinions. Here is Jim Goddard.
My guest is Ross Clark from chartsandmarkets.com, where you'll find insightful market commentary and timely technical analysis. You can find him on Twitter at ChartsByRoss. Welcome back to the show.
Good to be back, Jim.
Ross, how did the stock markets react to the U.S. midterm elections?
Well, on the election, they initially sold off and then bounced back reasonably well. And then we got to see CPI numbers on inflation, which showed that things are maybe subsiding a little bit, not going through the roof. And with that, there's the thought that maybe a hike in December might not be as high from the Fed as thought, and maybe not as much happening in next year. So it's a pretty big week when you take a look at the reactions around here. Really, the key that I keep an eye on is the U.S. dollar. It was down 7% here coming off on this week, and the index has come from 114 and change down to 106 and change as of Friday. So fits right in with the modeling that we had, which was two consecutive months of big overbought readings, and specifically with our exhaustion signals. And the likelihood is that you get a 38% retracement of the dollar index from the lows that we saw back in the first quarter of 2021. So for the index, which closed at 106.40, probably looking at something just under 105 as a reasonable target for that. On this break right now. And so with the reversal in the dollar, the pivot was back around September the 27th to 29th. Most markets put in highs or lows on that date. And it's looking, you know, when we look at something like the gold market, a week ago we had that outside reversal week. And then good follow through this week. So in a matter of six trading days, gold's put on $150. And it got up to the 50-week moving average, which for us is a key resistance here at 1770. So probably has maybe a few more days left in it, and then look for a pause.
The Canadian dollar was up, but how does it compare to other currencies?
Everybody here is pretty excited. The Canadian dollar for the week just had a great move. It's up 5% off the lows, down at 72. But if we take a look at the other currencies, the pound's up 13% in that same time window. The euro's up 8%. The yen is up 8%. So, you know, the the Canadian dollar here, clearly, it has a nice base there in that 72 to 74 range. It was a well-established base. It measures up to 76 and change, and we're at 75 and a half. So there's probably a little bit less in the Canadian dollar on this rally. But overall, not doing as well as other ones around the world. And, maybe some of that's because the commodities have really gone into a consolidation phase. They've lost a lot of that upside momentum that they had. You know, you think of crude oil, which was $125 back in June, sold off badly into September down to $75. And the rally has only retraced about a quarter of the decline. We're sitting at 88 and change to close off the week. So it's been in this consolidation phase now, if I look at it, since probably the first week of August. So not getting any positive bias there that would help out the Canadian. And overall, looking at the oil market, it's that resistance on the bounce is up around 94 that it's had trouble with two times now since the early part of October. And it looks as though if it can't hold the probably around the $82 level, we could be looking at something in the low 70s or high 60s before we have the a longer-term bottom on that one.
Ross, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Always a pleasure, Jim.
My guest has been Ross Clark from ChartsAndMarkets.com. Find him on Twitter at ChartsByRoss. Coming up, Dr. Mark Fauber next on This Week in Money.
Always consult your investment professional before making any investment decision. Don't miss out. Stay informed. Receive the HowStreet.com weekly recap with thought-provoking podcasts, radio, and articles delivered to your inbox. Sign up for the HowStreet.com weekly recap on our homepage at HowStreet.com. This Week in Money is archived online at TalkDigitalNetwork.com.
Welcome back. My guest is Dr. Mark Fauber, editor and publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report online at GloomBoomDoom.com. He's speaking to us from Chiang Mai, Thailand. Mark, welcome back to This Week in Money.
Thank you very much for having me on your program.
Mark, what's the latest at the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report, and how can people sign up for it?
Well, I have a website, gloomboomdoom.com. That's the best way, or to contact us by email directly.
Your thoughts on the aftermath of the U.S. midterm elections?
Well, I read a number of political commentators in the U.S., and for years they have been talking about computer fraud during elections and fraudulent practices, in other words, that dead people can vote and so forth. And it raises the question of integrity of the system. I think the voting system is not is antiquated and can be manipulated, and people no longer trust the results. So I put a very big question mark about these results that we had.
Mm-hmm. Do you believe brazen election fraud's on display in the U.S. and Brazil? And do you think people are starting to wake up to see that elections are actually selections?
Yes, I think this has been the case for a long time. And both the Republicans and the Democrats have used the system to manipulate results. So I'm not saying or accusing the Democrats in any way. I think it's just the political system that is utterly corrupt.
It seems like the World Economic Forum has a lot of members in places of power around the world, including Justin Trudeau and Joe Biden. Do you think Klaus Schwab and his followers will be successful with their push for Agenda 2030, the Great Reset, where you will own nothing but be happy about it?
Well, I think a lot of things that are happening recently are pointing the other way. I think this great reset about which Klaus Schwab is talking about, he has some other people around him like Noah Hariri, who I consider kind of a semi-academic. But my sense is that if you look at the world, it consists of the Western world under NATO and U.S. hegemony, and this includes notably the U.S., Canada, Australia, Britain, Western Europe, that is all of which are members of the of NATO. And then you have the other world, what I call the Eastern world, under the umbrella of China. And then you have a lot of non-aligned countries. There still is a non-aligned movement. It was formed in 1950, and the first well-known conference was Bandung, 1954 or 55. And it's an association of like over 100 countries who is more or less neutral. I mean, they didn't take sides with the Russians or the Chinese or the communists, and they didn't take sides with the Western alliance. So these people are becoming very important in the world because they include large population countries like Indonesia and India. China is not a member of the movement, but India and all the African countries are members of this non-aligned movement. So I think to kind of have a reset in the way under U.S. hegemony and under the rule of the WEF questionable crowd is not very likely.
Do markets care about widespread election fraud?
This is actually a very good question. Do people care if there is fraud? Do people care who is elected? I think a lot of people, they go home and they don't care who runs the country. They know politicians are corrupt. Increasingly people know that politicians are not there to defend the interests of the people. They know that politicians are there to solidify their position, their power. The politicians, they are considered as pathological cases of liars and cheaters and power-hungry characters. So people care. If you ask me what people care about, they care about their children being able to go to a decent school. They care about going out of their homes and not being knocked down by some cannibal or savage. And they care about the bills that they have to pay at the end of the month, and that they have enough money to pay all these things and survive. And they care about their standards of living. And if their standard of living is going down, they don't like it. And if it's going up, they like it. This is what people care about. And they care about, to some extent, not that much about freedom. They want to be able to go out of the house whenever they want, go home whenever they want. They want to be able to go to a pub. They care about being able to exchange their ideas with their friends. In other words, some sort of freedom of speech. And as I said, they care about the standard of living.
Does it look like the stock markets have bottomed?
This is difficult to tell. It may have bottomed out for a while, as I believe. I think we can rally a bit because we were in a deeply oversold condition. The short positions had increased. Put buying was at a very high level. There was a very high level of put buying, and usually when individuals are very bearish, the market doesn't go down, doesn't collapse, so this is a positive sign for a low. The valuation metrics are not at an ideal position for a low, but I have to correct these statements. Some markets have made or are in the process of making significant lows, because they've been in a bear market for 5 years. You take Hong Kong share. I lived in Hong Kong between 1973 and 2000, and I still have an office in Hong Kong. So, I mean, I'm quite familiar with the situation. In all those years I was in Hong Kong, and I was in the financial sector, I have never seen an atmosphere where everybody and everything was so negative as it is now. And I've also never seen the valuations this low. We are below book value in the whole market. Property companies sell at usually around 50% discount to net asset value. I agree that net asset values will come down, but not necessarily by 50%. And I agree with many arguments that the bear used. The only thing I disagree is that the stock market, because of this, will go down. I think we've reached kind of a maximum level of pessimism. And therefore, I think that some Hong Kong shares may be attractive. At the beginning of this year, I wrote a report and said there's a market that is very cheap because the currency has collapsed thanks to its central bank president called Erdogan, who is the role model of Ben Bernanke, because Erdogan likes to print money endlessly. So the Turkish lira had collapsed. Then I said, because of this collapse, stocks have become cheap. And I wrote a report that that Turkish stocks were inexpensive. Anyway, some people said to me, well, you don't know what you're talking about. Everything is bad in Turkey. I said to them, yes, I understand everything is bad. But that's why stocks are cheap. The Turkish fund this year, January to November, is up more than 60%. So all I want to say is people, they always say, oh, it's important to buy something inexpensively, and when they're expensive, we need to sell it. Everybody knows that, but how many people do it? Because when things are cheap, things look horrible. And this is the case for Hong Kong now.
What do you think the real rate of inflation is, and what needs to be done to turn inflation around?
The rate of inflation where?
Say North America right now and Asia right now.
Well, I mean, in the EU, the rate of inflation, and I don't like to talk about the rate of inflation without defining inflation.
Mm-hmm.
The definition of inflation is an increase in the quantity of money. And then the symptoms, you know, this increase in the quantity of money can lead to property prices going up, to stock prices going up, commodity prices going up, and then. So this is important to understand. But what people, the man on the street normally understands is inflation is an increase in consumer prices. Well, consumer prices are going up, and we need to distinguish consumer prices for goods and services. So I suppose that your insurance premiums in Canada will go up this year by between 7 and 12% for health, car, and so forth. I suppose that inflation, overall, consumer price inflation will be in the area of 7 or between 7 and 12%, something like this. So if you look at the rate of inflation, even today it came down compared to interest rates. Interest rates are still far too low.
Do you see a time frame for peak interest rates, and how high could they go?
Well, may I suggest that you look up the 70s. I did a study, and it's interesting. Everybody laughed about the then chairman of the Fed, Arthur Burns. But already in 69, he had pushed up interest rates with the result that the yield on the 10-year U.S. Treasury was over 9%. It is at the present time less than 4%. And then from this 9% plus in 69, it fell to less than 4% in 72. 72 to 74, it went up to 12%. For the 10-year Treasury note yield. And then it fell down to less than 4% in 77. And then we had the big inflation push into 1980-81. So all I'm saying is we could have 2-3 years of moderating inflation, before inflation accelerates again. It's difficult to tell. My sense is that we've seen the low of inflation in the world. We've for sure seen the low of interest rates in the world because they were artificially kept, artificially low by brain-damaged central bankers. These are not central bankers. They're actually criminals. They deliberately lowered the purchasing power of money. So to answer your question, we don't know. But in general, I would say, looking at central bankers, looking at governments and their generosity to spend money, which doesn't belong to the government officials, they have to collect it one day through taxation. Looking at all these things, I think there's a chance that we are in a maybe 10 to 20 year inflation upcycle.
Yeah, I do remember the early 80s, Canada savings bonds paid 21%.
Correct.
Could interest rates be rising by design?
As I said, interest rates will go up and down. We may have reached a peak temporary for 6 months, 3 months, 9 months, who knows. Maybe we'll go up higher, but for now, I think there's a chance that we have seen a peak that will go down for a few months. Is it the peak of interest rates forever? No. I tried to explain to you very clearly what happened in the 70s, that from a peak in 69 of 9% on treasuries, we went to another peak in 74 of over 12%. In between, we went down to less than 4%. And then from 77, from less than 4%, we went to over 15% in 1981. And nobody expected this to happen. So you can sit there and say we've seen the peak of interest rate, and I say not likely, but I don't know for sure, but not likely.
With real estate bubbles and debt bubbles, how bad could the real estate markets get in Canada?
Well, in Canada, we are in one of the biggest real estate bubbles in history. I think real estate prices will come down. But maybe the government will say, well, we have to help them and so forth, and keep interest rates artificially low, in which case inflation will accelerate. I repeat, in which case inflation will accelerate, and the currency will weaken further.
Are there signs or signals when it's a good time to buy real estate?
Yes, when it is cheap. It is not cheap now in Canada.
Is the Bank of International Settlements used by the powers that be to control the economies of the world?
Well, I don't think the Bank of International Settlements is that powerful an organization. It is sort of a central bank of central banks, but it doesn't have real power, in my opinion. The more powerful institutions are the U.S. Treasury, of course, and the Federal Reserve.
What's really happening in China's economy?
Well, the economy is not doing well, but the real estate market is poor, and a lot of people will lose their money or have lost money. There was a lot of speculation in stocks and cryptos and so forth, and a lot of people will lose money. In all Asian countries, there were big speculators in everything, especially in Korea. And so they lose a lot of money. That the fundamental of the Chinese economy is still strong. They're still a major exporter. The industrial production is still strong. But obviously, in sectors that are used in the real estate market, there is some weakness. And there's some weakness in consumption. But in general, the economy is not doing well, but in my opinion, still better than in Europe.
What are you hearing on Russia-Ukraine?
Well, this is a subject that takes 1 or 2 hours to discuss. All I want to say is that increasingly it looks as if the war got underway because the U.S. wanted to go to war against Russia, and specifically Putin. So this is my view. And that someone would believe that Nord Stream 1 and 2 would be blown up by Russia, he needs to look at the fact who has had an interest that Nord Stream would never get built and never get used. For years, the U.S. has opposed Nord Stream.
We're hearing the death rates around the world are 40% higher than usual. What effect could this have on markets, economies, and especially real estate?
Well, the high level of debt is, of course, negative.
Your thoughts on gold and silver?
As always, and I have been on your program for many years, and each time I say the same, people who are responsible should own some physical gold, silver, and platinum, because you cannot print gold. There's a limited quantity of gold that reaches the world every year. You cannot print silver. You cannot print platinum. And most of the other items of collectibles and so forth, you can multiply the supply. The easiest to multiply is the supply of paper money. And the central bankers have used this mechanism to enlarge the government at the expense of the private sector. If you're a Canadian and you don't see that the government is becoming bigger and bigger and bigger, and that it doesn't look after the private interests of the Canadians, you need to re-examine your view of the world. The government is a cancer that expands because central banks are financing this expansion.
Is crude oil a key component of price inflation?
Crude oil has gone up because of money printing largely and because of poor government policies. How can Mr. Biden say to the oil companies, no more drilling? The next day he tells them increase the supply of oil. The next day he tells them that they should be subject to windfall profit taxes. What do you think? If I'm an executive of an oil company and someone tells me no more drilling, oh, we'll take your profits away. What incentive do I have to go and increase my production? Tell me. The problem with today's politicians and the leading light of incompetence is Mr. Trudeau. He's the leader of dumb, incompetent leaders in the world. Canadians should build in every city a statue. This is our dumbest, worst president, prime minister we ever had.
Could gasoline prices go even higher?
Everything can go higher. The question is when. Maybe gasoline will come down. I think there is a recession now. We're already in recession. There'll be demand reduction, but eventually, when central banks print again money, everything can go up.
If the U.S. dollar collapsed, what would happen to all the other currencies?
Well, you asked me about gold, silver, and platinum.
Mm-hmm.
I responded to you that you should own some gold, platinum, and silver. Now, the other currencies, they may not go down all that much against the U.S. dollar, because your viewers or listeners, they can look at the picture of Mrs. Lagarde in Europe. She's the caretaker of the value of the euro. She's exactly like Biden. But I trust gold. The only thing I've said to you on many occasions, the danger is that the government, who could lock down people in Canada, who behaved like dictatorial powers in Latin America towards the truckers, who were all peaceful people, that these people will take it away from you one day. That is the danger. But the Canadians sit there. They don't do anything against the government. They accept, oh, the government closes, wants us to take vaccine. Okay, we have to take vaccine. The government closes our business. Okay, we close it. There's no courage of opposition towards these people.
Are you playing the crypto markets?
Well, the crypto market is a misconception. It is a market that has been created to make a few people very wealthy and the majority of people poor. This is my view of the crypto market.
With the worldwide push for electric vehicles, what are your thoughts on battery metals?
Probably okay, but inefficient, energy inefficient. To produce a battery costs much more and produces much more damage to the environment than to have a gas engine, or I mean a petrol engine, and run it on fossil fuel. So we need to look at the input cost into batteries, into into windmills. I have to laugh when people think, guys, they can solve the energy crisis by putting up windmills all over the place. Windmills are highly inefficient, very costly, damaging the environment, and so forth and so on. But let the environmentalists, they are like the alchemists in the Middle Ages, or the Crusaders. They had no chance, but they went on the crusade, and the cost was unbelievable, unbelievably high. They bankrupted European states. But nonetheless, it attracted the fantasy of people. And the Greens are communists. They want to dominate the world. They're not interested in you. They're not interested in farmers. In New Zealand, they want to now tax sheep and cattle, a head tax, because these animals, they produce some methane. But what is more important for the world, to feed itself or to go hungry and have famine, but to solve the environmental ambitions of some lunatics? So I'm very skeptical about all these people who travel around in the private planes and attend conferences, and then they tell ordinary people that they have to now cut down on their energy use.
Where are you investing or protecting your money?
Well, as I explained, for the last 20 years or so, I'm diversified. I own some shares. I own some real estate in different countries. I own some physical precious metals in different countries. And I own some cash and bonds. And that's what I do. And I'm not likely to change that.
Do you think there's a big difference in IQ between people on the left and people on the right?
No. I think there are people on the right who are very astute and intelligent and clever, and the people on the left who are manipulative and smart and clever. So, you know, I wouldn't make that distinction. And I'd like to point out that some people on the right may support people on the left, and vice versa. Some people on the left may support some people on the right. So it's a very complex situation in the world.
Overall, are you seeing gloom, boom, or doom ahead?
I think that people have vastly exaggerated expectations about their future wealth. We had a wonderful year, 1981, to say 3-4 years ago, with interruptions, as you know, 2007, 2008, 2009. Some people lost everything. And now we are in a period like from 66 to 82, 18 years, 1966 to 1982. The stock market in real terms did not move up, but went down, inflation adjusted, by 70%. It didn't go down in nominal terms. In other words, the Dow Jones in 66 was at 800, and in 82 it also went to 800, below 800, but in real terms, inflation adjusted, it went down. We could have markets move sideways, down, up, whatever it is. I think in real terms, you will lose money.
Mark, how can people find out more about and subscribe to the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report?
Well, I have a website, gloomboomdoom.com. Gloom, boom, doom. All in one word. And there they can see what we have. I have one report monthly, which I think is useful and appropriate for individuals. But these individuals, they have to spend some time reading it and studying it. And I have a lot of reference to books and things they need to read so they can actually study economics by reading the report. I think if someone reads the report attentively and with discipline for 2 or 3 years, he would know more than going to Harvard for a business course. Anyway, that report costs $300, and the other report is more expensive because it goes to financial institutions, governments, and wealthy people. I mean, super wealthy people. And we have several billionaires among our subscribers.
Mark.
So this is what I do.
Mark, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Well, my pleasure. Thank you very much. And I wish your listeners a wonderful festive season and Merry Christmas. In a few years' time, maybe it's politically no longer correct to say Merry Christmas. So let's still enjoy it as long as it lasts. And hopefully by the time the question will come up, Mr. Trudeau will no longer be Prime Minister.
Thanks again, Mark.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
My guest has been Dr. Mark Fauber, editor and publisher of the Gloom, Boom, and Doom Report at gloomboomdoom.com. He was speaking to us from Chiang Mai, Thailand. Coming up, Victor Adair, next on This Week in Money.
Introducing Recyclico, making lithium-ion last forever. Recyclico's patented recycling process achieves up to 100% recovery of battery metals from lithium-ion batteries for electric vehicles, including cobalt, lithium, nickel, manganese, and aluminum. Recyclico Battery Materials Incorporated trades on the TSX Venture AMY, on the OTCQB, AMYZF, and Frankfurt 2AM. For more information, visit recyclico.com or phone us at 778-574-4444. Recyclico, making lithium ion last forever.
This Week in Money is archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com.
My guest is Victor Adair, recently retired from nearly 50 years of being in the brokerage business in BC, but he's still very active in the markets. Welcome back to This Week in Money.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure to talk with you.
Victor, although this isn't something we plan to talk about, and you've already self-declared that you're not an expert in it, but I'm just watching the disaster that's happening with FTX, a collapse of one of the biggest crypto traders out there. They're now going to have to declare bankruptcy, and the founder has seen his fortune of $30.4 billion drop 94% in 1 week. Bloomberg says it's, and Forbes say it's the biggest collapse of a billionaire's fortune ever. So I think I understand when you said, you know, I don't really look at crypto, I don't trade in crypto. Are you glad you never did?
It was just something I didn't do. I mean, in a way, you can't do everything and do anything well. So I kind of just specialized in trading exchange-traded derivative contracts, futures on commodities and stock indices and things like that. I mean, I certainly looked at crypto out of the corner of my eye. It had a fabulous rally over the past couple of years and then, you know, a fabulous decline. I'm talking Bitcoin particularly. Yeah. I think the thing with it for me was that I saw these stories about people had some money invested in it, and their money just disappeared somehow or other. And the markets that I trade are regulated markets. Customer money is set aside and all that, and there's people to make sure that that happens. So I just kind of knew about the safeguards within the markets that I traded, so I didn't venture outside of that. I mean, I've traded over the years some goofy stuff for sure, and definitely lost money because somebody did something they shouldn't have. But I never got involved in crypto. You couldn't miss the story this week. It was big. The guy had a really bad week. What could I say?
Yeah, and apparently there's allegations that he borrowed out money that had been
given to him for investment, and that's pretty well the definition of a Ponzi scheme. So he may not have just lost money. He might end up facing fraud charges.
Yeah, I see those stories too, and that always, you know, what my friend Dennis Gartman used to say, there's never just one cockroach, you know, so there's, if something's going bad, there's probably more than one thing going bad. Anyway, I just, because I don't pay attention to it anywhere near as much as I do to the markets that I trade, I don't think I have anything more, more to offer on the subject.
Yeah. Well, so often, as I put it, you know, even if real estate goes down, you still have some real estate. If it's gold, silver, platinum, something like that, you still have something. Now, but here you started off. I mean, cryptos literally are nothing. It's just a digital code. And I said, look, a lightning strike could hit outside and knock out my computer, and I could lose millions of dollars right there. How do I get that code back? It's gone. It's disappeared. There's no way to recover. Anyway, getting back to semi-reality here, the American October Cost of Living Index came out, sparking a massive rally in stocks, bonds, foreign currencies, some commodities, especially precious and base metals. What are your thoughts? Is inflation coming down?
Well, the market certainly wants to believe that. And let me put that in perspective. I think for the past several months, the market has been hoping, you know, fingers crossed, that we've hit peak inflation, and sort of by derivative from that, you know, we've hit peak Fed tightening, and there's been a lot of hopes kind of hung on that, and there's been a lot of disappointment because we haven't seen it. So this time around, the headline number was a 7.7% change from where it was last year, year over year. And that was down from what the market had been expecting, which was 8%. So, you know, we just kind of went crazy. You're right, the markets rallied, and we can get into the individual markets later. But I think what we have here, really, is that because of this very modest decline in inflation from 1 month, from year over year, but like month to month as well, the market is kind of hoping that the central bank, particularly the Fed, is going to slow the rate of increase that they have for interest rates and eventually will stop raising rates. Now, even with that hope, markets are still pricing in the United States another full percentage point rate of gains between now and February. That'll be December, January, and February. And, you know, we'll see after that. So it's not like interest rates started to fall or the expectation of where the Fed rate is going to be in the future. That had this impact on all the markets. I would say that a lot of it was a case of things that had gone down the hardest rallied the most. So it looked like there was a lot of short covering here. Now, we've been in a bit of an uptrend since the last CPI number. That was October the 13th. And I think we've done an interview since then. But on that day, the market opened at a two-year low. That's the stock market. And then had a terrific rally, even though, you know, the inflation number was still strong. So we've had this hope in the market, and now we've got what we would call a positioning, as people are jockeying to readjust their positions and all that sort of thing. I guess my takeaway here is that inflation may have peaked, okay, but it is still historically high, and the Fed and other central banks as well are going to continue to raise interest rates. And that gets us into another issue, and that is, you know, the economy clearly is slowing in different parts. You've seen layoffs, you're seeing that sort of thing. A recession may develop or may already be underway, and the unemployment rate that people watch is definitely a lagging indicator. In other words, we're already in trouble by the time the unemployment rate starts to go up. So, you know, in an environment like that, the stock market generally doesn't do all that well, although it would be good for bonds. So if that kind of answers your question, then maybe we can roll on from there.
The Dow fell more than 8,000 points or 23%
from its all-time highs in January to the two-year lows hit in October. Since then, it's rallied 5,000 points. Now, is this rally the beginning of a new bull phase?
Well, there'd be a lot of people that would hope so, that's for sure. And I think some of the people that were buying the market here the last couple of days of the week either believed that or felt that they had no choice but to buy. And let me explain that to you. This year has been a horrible year for money managers who, you know, handle other people's money, whether it's pension funds or, you know, your stock, local stockbroker or anybody in between, because stocks and bonds have both gone down. We call it the 60-40 portfolio. It's had its most miserable year in forever. And the thinking used to be that if you own stocks, you should also own bonds because they're kind of a balancing act. If one's going down, the other one's probably going up and vice versa. So if both of your main items in your portfolio are going down, it's bad news. So they've had a bad year, and particularly for money managers, if they didn't chase the market higher and it continued to go higher, and typically, by the way, this time of the year is the best time of the year for the stock market to go higher. When we call that seasonality, if you go back and look at the last 20 years or something, the market generally almost always, you know, goes higher late in the year. I mean, 2008 comes to mind, and it certainly didn't, but whatever, that's the average. If you're a money manager and you're looking after other people's money, and the market goes up like this without you investing, especially if your competitors have put their clients' money to work, you're going to lose assets under administration. So you got to get in here. So there's going to be that. Then certainly there's just plain old FOMO, where somebody who wants to make money sees the market going up and he jumps in. Is this rally the beginning of a new bull phase? I've got my doubts, okay? And by the way, the last couple of months here, I've traded the market from the long side and from the short side. I mean, I'm ambivalent. I just want to go whichever way the market's going. I don't have a axe to grind one way or the other. But I just mentioned this thing about a possible recession. The Fed has jammed up interest rates at a faster rate of change than I think we've ever seen before, even including, at least back to Paul Volcker's days. So when you ramp up interest rates that quickly, it's got to have a big impact. And, of course, the Fed, in a way, wants to have a big impact. I mean, they've been raising rates because inflation's so high, they want to get inflation down. So the risk, of course, is that what they're doing causes a highly levered society, conniptions, and, you know, things go in the toilet. So maybe we have a recession coming, and then I just got done saying, you know, that's not good news for stock markets typically. So, you know, I also believe that nobody knows for sure. I don't know for sure. I'm just going to be watching the price action, and I'll follow the price action or try to anticipate it and get in front of it.
You've been bullish on the U.S. dollar in every monthly interview we've done since January 2021, except for the last 2 months when you thought the dollar might be peaking. The dollar index has fallen about 8% from 20-year highs it made late September. Is this the end of the U.S. dollar rally or just a correction?
Well, I'll tell you, in my world, that's the $64 trillion question. My experience trading currencies for certainly more than 40 years, is that the trends go way further than you think makes any sense, and then they kind of turn on a dime and go the other way. So we've had that with the dollar. I think from January, it was actually January 6th of 2021 when the market made a multi-year low. That's the U.S. dollar index. It's rallied not quite 30%, but awfully close. That's a huge move in the currency markets. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, it has kind of turned on a dime. I mean, we hit a 20-year high at the end of September, and now we're down 8% since then. In the currency world, that's turning on a dime. So, and as you're right, the past 2 months, I've been kind of waffling on my thought about the U.S. dollar going higher. And just to back up on that one, my rationale, and what I've said for years and years, is that money comes to America for safety and opportunity. So when there's troubles in the world, capital will flow to the center, which is the American markets. And when people are feeling frisky and want to take a chance, you know, they go invest in some place, you know, you couldn't find on a map. And I'm being maybe a little dramatic here, but just to give you the idea of how capital goes from risky to less risky. So the past couple of years, there's been, let's say, a risk premium to be in other currencies. So you want to be in the U.S. dollar. And there's also always been the opportunity in America. The capital markets are just way bigger. I think the American stock markets are in excess of 60% of all the stock markets in the world, something like that. And there's innovation in free markets and so on. So, you know, and it is the reserve currency for most of the world. So it does attract capital like a magnet. However, when you get a trend and it goes and goes and goes, it gets overdone and people think it'll go up forever and then, you know, it turns. So we may have had a major turn here. I'm undecided about that, and I don't mind, you know, not knowing, as it were. I'll trade it, and I have to say I have really not taken advantage of this turn that we've had in the U.S. dollar. The move just seemed to come out of nowhere so quick, and I just hate chasing a move. You know, if I want to buy a market and I go to sleep and it's at a level and I wake up in the morning and it's jumped higher, that's really tough for me to step up and buy it. So as much as I thought the dollar was turning, you know, I haven't really made any money from that trade, and, you know, that's a little frustrating, but I as a trader, I just let that go. So, Jim, to answer your question, I don't know, but the dollar, I'm going to be from Missouri here. I think that the dollar has had a pretty good correction, but I can certainly see some scenarios here where the dollar will again be a magnet for capital. So I'll just have to watch the flows.
Missouri, the show me state.
Yeah.
The loonie, the Canadian dollar, dropped about 6 cents in September, October to below 72 cents, the lowest it's been in over 2 years. It rallied back about 3 cents in the last month. Where does it go from here?
Well, the Canada has rallied back here the last month or so as the U.S. dollar has weakened, as the stock market has gone up, you know, and I use the S&P 500 as the barometer of risk on and risk off in the world. And if the stock market is going up, it tells me that the market's feeling more frisky than if it's going down. So Canada has this strong correlation, certainly as a counter to where the U.S. dollar is. If the U.S. dollar is going up against everything, you know, then Canada's going down. If the stock market's going up, Canada's probably going up. And if commodity markets are getting bid, Canada's probably going up. And, you know, it's got little to do with whether or not it's Trudeau or somebody else that's the prime minister. I mean, from time to time, there's other things come into play for sure. For instance, if the Bank of Canada was to be lowering interest rates while the Americans were raising interest rates, that would be, all other things being equal, a real drag on the Canadian dollar. So Canada here, I think, is mostly going to be, going forward, is going to be a funk. If you knew where the stock market was going and where the U.S. dollar was going, that would be an easy question to answer. You say, well, if the stock market is going down and the U.S. dollar is going up, then the Canadian dollar is going to be going down. You know, that's about it. So, I'm decided. I don't have a hard opinion on where Canada can go from here. It's going to be more a reaction function. I mean, when I'm trading here and I see something going on, I'm what I'd call a macro tourist. I'm always looking at different macro markets because I know traders all around the world, let's say, that are in the bond market are definitely looking at what's going on in stocks and commodities and currencies. All these markets have these interrelationships. So when I'm looking at the board here and I have a feeling that the market is going to go risk on, I could buy the Canadian dollar or I could buy the S&P 500. It's, for me, it's the same trade. it'd be unlikely that, you know, one would go one direction and the other go the other way unless there was some particularly unusual circumstance. So right now, the Canada has been rising the past month or so because the market's feeling a little more risk-on, willing to speculate that way. If that changes, Canada's going to change.
American 10-year Treasury bond yields hit a historic low of 0.5% in August 2020. They've been trending higher ever since. A year ago, the 10-year yield was about 1.5%. Last month, it hit a 15-year high of 4.25%. The Fed's pushing higher interest rates to bring inflation down. Is that working? And what could be the consequences?
Yeah, I mean, this is the heart of the matter, as the Eagles would say, I guess. A little better than a year ago, the Fed was saying they thought inflation was transitory, that it had the bit of inflation that we were seeing at that time, I want to say a bit that was above the 2% level that they wanted, they thought that was caused by supply shortages and so on. We'd seen with everybody locked down under COVID, people were spending more money on stuff, goods, they would call it in the economist language, rather than on services. And goods were in short supply because you couldn't ship them around and warehouses were closed and so on and so on and so on. So we got this demand, I mean, maybe nothing more dramatically than used cars, you know, spiked up in price because I guess on the one hand, the availability of new cars weren't there because factories were closed. And subsequently, we've seen the prices, the index anyway, of used car prices has just fallen like a stone. Anyway, that was more than a year ago the Fed thought things were transitory. And then about this time last year, the Fed started to change their tune. And their thought was the only tool that they could really use was to increase or tighten financial conditions, which would be, broadly speaking, to raise interest rates. And they were doing that to try to bring inflation down. There was lots of people that thought that was a good idea, lots of commentators that said, you're nuts, you know, and it's not going to work, and it's going to cause all kinds of other problems and so on, that there's always differences of opinion. But as a trader, I have to focus on what I think will be happening rather than what I think is the right thing or what should be happening. A lot of people trading in the markets took the view that, you know, the Fed is going to be determined. They're going to keep doing this. And that seems to be the case. Just the most recent Fed meeting we had a week ago, Powell made it absolutely clear that they were determined to bring inflation down, and that would mean rising and rising interest rates. So these dramatic rises in interest rates are having an effect on the economy. The consequences that you're speaking of, I alluded to earlier, the prospect of a highly levered economy facing sharply higher interest rates is going to have some spasms. I mean, the mortgage rate, the American mortgage market's usually on a 30-year term. Interest rates there are about 7.25% or thereabouts now. That's, I don't know, the highest they've been in well over a decade and probably more. And what we're seeing is sales of homes are going down, prices of homes are going down, homes for sale, you know, coming off the market. And a lot of people work in the business of building, you know, homes or, you know, appliances for homes and on. It's a big part of the economy. So there's a very reasonable expectation, I think, that if the interest rate gets jacked up in a highly levered economy, that something unintended happens. Now, again, the Fed has told us one way or another that they understand that, but it is more important, they say, to get inflation down now than, you know, just go easy on it and have inflation become a runaway problem. There's academic commentary going backwards and forwards, taking different views on that, but as I said, I gotta pay attention to what I think will happen, and I think they are going to continue to push interest rates higher until they get inflation down. Whether or not that's the right thing to do, I don't know. But and sooner or later, it's going to have consequences. In a trader's language, we say maybe something breaks. You know, we have a major financial institution goes under or something like that. Although this time around, that's what happened back in 08. This time around, it'll probably be something else, something nobody's watching. And then later people think, God, why didn't I think of that? I should have seen that coming. So there will be consequences for sure from jacking up the interest rates the way they have.
In many of our interviews, you said a strong U.S. dollar and the rising interest rates are a toxic environment for gold. I see gold's up about $150 from last week's lows. Is this the beginning of a new bull market for gold?
Oh, boy. I know there'd be a lot of people that would be happy if it was, you know, and it may be. Let me give you this perspective. First of all, to go to what you said about interest rates and the U.S. dollar, strong U.S. dollar being toxic. I have been saying that. I believe it. I think it's a fact. You got a real strong U.S. dollar and high interest rates. That's not the ideal environment for a bull market in gold. And we've seen gold struggle. I mean, we had a spike in March or late February, whenever it was, when the Russians invaded the Ukraine. Okay, we spiked up, we spiked up $200. But let's call it a geopolitical event. It didn't last. You know, the power of the rising U.S. dollar and rising interest rates kind of dragged gold down. And I've traded gold, I don't know, for nearly 50 years, only 45 years. I've traded gold a lot. I really pay attention to it. And I have seen here in the last several months, that traders just have lost interest in gold. I mean, it's been neglected. I see the open interest in the futures markets has drifted down. Now, it's jumped up in the last couple of weeks here for sure, but over in the ETF market, and I pay attention to that because I think people that are real short-term traders are going to go to the futures market. People with a longer-term perspective might go to the gold ETF market. And then maybe people with an even longer time frame might go out and buy, shares of companies or ETFs of shares of companies. But the bullion ETFs, it's just been nothing but sellers, net sellers since the spike in March. So people have what I'm saying is I thought the gold market was getting really abandoned, getting oversold, that sort of thing. And then bang, we have a spark here. With a change in the market's perception of where interest rates and the dollar might be going, so gold has jumped. So, yeah, I think, it could be the turn we're looking for. Again, like I said about currency markets, as much as I thought the U.S. dollar might be tending, about to turn lower, I didn't capitalize on it and take advantage. And I have not been a trader here in the gold market in the past couple of weeks. And now, it doesn't mean I haven't done anything, but my trading has been focused on trading stock indices and trading bonds. And I've done well there. Just like I was saying about the Canadian dollar earlier, I could buy the Canadian dollar or I could buy the stock indices because they were going to go the same way. So I bought the stock indices. The gold is in a different world a little bit, but it's very much a function of the weaker dollar here the past couple of weeks and the thought that interest rates have gone as high as they will, or inflation has gone as high as they will, and hence interest rates. I think that's what's boosted the gold market.
There have been conflicting reports from China on their COVID containment policies, but commodity prices have been rising. Is China going to be a big buyer of commodities again?
The China story, to frame it this way, I mean, for the past several months, they've had a brutal containment policy on COVID, you know, locking things down, closing factories, ports, so not able to move stuff, and on and on and on. And where are we at here? Just less than a month ago, she was... call it reelected. We'll have to put that in parentheses or quotes. Anyway, he is going to now be basically president for life. So, and I have the thought that he doesn't much care about markets. He's got different priorities. And when I say that, I mean, following his appointment as leader for life, I mean, the major stock indices and certainly the tech stock indices in China just fell to new multi-year lows. Like the domestic market over there didn't like it. I think maybe they saw him as being the furthest thing from being pro-business. And on top of that, you know, the lockdown policy was his policy. Okay, it wasn't like, you know, a committee dreamt it up. No, that was his idea. So now he's the chief guy. He's not going to say, gee, I was wrong, we got to change that. So, you know, so we were in an environment where it looked like the lockdown policies, whatever you want to call them, containment policies, were going to continue until there was no more COVID. And Friday of last week, the 4th of November, there was a rumor went around in the markets that, oh, hey, they're going to ease back on the containment policies. But we saw copper, I think, spike 20 cents on that day. Some other things were all of the base metals, I should say, were rising. Silver and gold, that was kind of their turn date. Then over the weekend, the officials came out and said, you know, they poo-pooed the rumor. No, that's not going to happen. Now, here again, at the end of this week, we had, I think it was on Friday, that Chinese authorities kind of officially came out and said, yeah, they're going to ease back on some of the containment policies. So we had a rally. Your question was, is China going to be a big buyer of commodities again? Well, I think the market certainly hopes so. I mean, the Australian dollar is up. You know, you just can imagine, you know, Australian exports would be increasing. Price of copper is up. Crude oil took a jump last week. Not so much this week on the rumor, but I should say the reports this time that they're going to change. I wonder about China. I mean, we had a 20-year run where China, from roughly when China went into the World Trade Organization in 2002 till lately, where everybody thought that China was just going to keep buying everything. You know, they're going to keep building buildings and so on. And when I look at it now, I see a highly, highly levered economy that's been struggling. The real estate sector has certainly got some problems. And maybe, you know, maybe they turn inward more. Maybe they feel, you know, that's the way they go. So anyway, I am suspect of the idea that they're going to become, you know, this or resume their position as being a huge buyer of commodities. I mean, it's a huge economy, a lot of people there, right? So they're certainly going to be buying some stuff. But whether or not, you know, they will be the driving force behind a renewed commodity rally, yeah, I'm not so sure.
You've been an active trader for 50 years. How has your approach to trading changed over the years?
Well, so 50 years ago, I was in university and I was trading penny mining stocks. And I would buy a mining stock because somebody told me it was going to go up. I don't do that anymore. I mean, you know, you might get the idea. I don't believe much of anything anymore. And in a way, that's right. But certainly I'm not going to buy something because somebody told me it was going up. I also had no idea what risk control was in those days. I mean, I remember maybe a couple of years later, I was continuing to trade penny mining stocks, and I found out I could buy shares without actually having to pay for them. I mean, you talk about leverage. Now, what it was is in those days, there was a five-day settlement. You bought your stock, and 5 days later, you had to put up the money. I mean, they preferred that you had the money in your account, but, you know, that was the rules. So you could speculate for a few days that if you thought a stock was going up, you could buy it and not have to pay it and then sell. Now, they didn't really want you to do that, but you could. And one time I did that, and I bought some stock more than I could afford, and they just delisted it. I mean, you couldn't sell it. So that was a painful experiment or episode, and I began to manage risk maybe a little better after that. But these days, yeah, I am way less aggressive than I was when I was younger. I mean, who isn't, you know? I've traded through all these years. I've seen a lot of people just get blown away in the market, and I'm still here. So being less aggressive maybe is, you know, promotes longevity as a trader. I'm way more, I work harder now than I ever did as a trader. I follow markets. They go 24 hours a day. I pay attention to a lot of markets. I read all kinds of research. I subscribe to all kinds of services. I have a network of people that I consult with and talk about this and that, and we get opinions from each other. And maybe the biggest difference with my trading now is I keep coming back to this. I don't want to sound nihilistic, but I just really, I'm again, from Missouri. I don't believe a story. You know, for instance, I've referenced this before. For the past few years, everybody, there was a story going around that copper was going to become almost as valuable as gold because blah, blah, blah. You know, the story, the electrification of the world. Well, it didn't yet. I mean, it may still, but, you know, the story went around. A lot of people that didn't know anything about copper bought the story and probably lost money. I definitely have opinions about markets and what I think will happen, but more and more I look at what actually is happening with the price action. I trade the price action. I'm prepared to be wrong. To me, it's only a trade, whereas, you know, years ago, if I bought something, I believed it was going to go up. These days, I buy something because I think it's going to go up. If it doesn't, I just sell it and then move on to what's next. And I sell it, you know, at a loss or at a profit or whatever. It doesn't matter. It's just a trade. So I become much more hard-ass, I guess, about that. And maybe just to wrap that up, Jimmy, the thing that I've said so many times is I think, at least my approach is, I make money trading the markets because of how I manage risk rather than because I have a great crystal ball.
Victor, thank you so much for being on This Week in Money.
Jim, it always is a pleasure to talk with you. Thanks for having me on.
My guest has been Victor Adair. Check out his website, victoradair.ca. And that wraps up our show for this week. We'd like to thank our guests, Ross Clark, Mark Fauber, and Victor Adair. And thank you for listening. If you have any questions for the show or our guests, you can send them to info@howstreet.com. Now stand by for a company showcase update from Zarco Masalgia, CEO of Recyclical Battery Materials. I'm Jim Goddard. We'll be back next week with more This Week in Money.
Comments made on This Week in Money are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at talkdigitalnetwork.com. This Week in Money is a production of How Street Media Incorporated. Executive producer is Tom Allen. Welcome to Company Showcase, an advertising feature on HowStreet.com.
I'm Jim Goddard. I'm speaking with Zarco Masalgia. He's the Chief Executive Officer of Recyclical Battery Materials. Zarco, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me, Jim. You know, it's been a busy time, and I will have to keep this one short because I am currently on the road right now, traveling, and with lots more travel to come this month. I'll be at Benchmark Week next week, where we'll be taking part in both the cathodes event and the sustainability event. And aside from me presenting and being on a panel discussion, I think these events are great networking opportunities and something I think we all miss compared to the Zoom events. I'm also glad I took an extra day there to squeeze in some meetings. And at the end of the month, I'm planning to head to Europe for various meetings to help further our dialogue with certain contacts and companies. It feels like we've been getting visitors to demonstration plants every week, so it's my turn to do some of the traveling now. However, I couldn't really miss this week's podcast after the exciting news release we had this week. You know, the whole team has been working to their limits over the past few weeks on day shift and night shift, and it really shows in the operation results and the overall sentiment at the demonstration plant. And as a recap, you know, prior to the most recent testing, you know, we had tested, if you remember, the pre-leach stage and the leach stage of the demo plant, where we produced thousands of liters of leach solution, right? And this is using our patented technology. And over the past few weeks, we ran this solution through, you know, what would be an impurity removal stage. And as the name indicates, it's to remove any impurities we don't want in our, you know, future battery-ready materials. And then that clean solution, it went through where we extract the nickel, manganese, and cobalt. So we went through that removal stage. And then what's really left in that solution is a lithium solution, and which is where we'll go on now this month to recover the lithium carbonate. And, you know, I've been asked this a few times, so I'll just address it here, but the demonstration plant stages have, you know, to date been tested in this batch sequence. And this is for data collection and analysis purposes, so we can just, you know, collect data and make any adjustments stage by stage. But all stages really come together in a continuous process. And all that data from testing is used towards an engineering study to help prepare us and refine our, you know, future commercial plant designs, their operating costs, their capital costs, with potential strategic partners as well, right? So this is all now getting data at a demo scale operation. And as mentioned in our press release, you know, in order to serve the broader market, we will continue testing at the demo plant with various feedstock materials such as different cathode production scraps and black mass materials. And this is, you know, material we'll be receiving from different areas of the world. And at the same time, we'll also be expanding our offering of the materials we produce. So different lithium products, different cathode products, like cathode precursor products. So it's, you know, it's quite exciting. And we have a lot of exciting work in our pipeline, even right now, regarding testing and material shipment for those interested third parties. And I'm looking forward to the future development and what comes out of that. And yeah, sorry to keep it short on you, Jim, today, but I just wanted to give everybody that update and kind of share my excitement with everything that's going on coming up to the end of the year pretty soon.
Zarco, a lot of articles I read about electric vehicles, people are wondering, what are they going to do with the old batteries? I believe your company has the solution to that.
Yeah, and you know, it's and we're doing a lot of this work today, right? We're processing real industry cathode scrap material and you know, black mass material and at quite the scale, right? When you look at the demonstration plant scale and the visitors we get, you know, just really seeing it in person, I think gives everybody the realization at how large of an operation this is and what we're doing with those waste materials.
Zarco, where are you traded and how can people get more information about Recyclical?
We are traded on the TSXV under the ticker symbol AMY, on the OTCQB under AMYZF, and on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange. I'd just like to update some people that if you do trade on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange, you'll notice it's no longer 2 a.m. It's actually ID4. So ID4 on the Frankfurt Stock Exchange. And you can get more information on our website, www.recyclico.com. I know there will be some rerouting to the American Manganese Inc. webpage, but we are working on bringing up Recyclico to be live and the direct company website. So keep your eyes out for that.
Zarco, enjoy your travels and great success.
Thank you, Jim. Speak to you next time.
My guest has been Zarco Masalgia, Chief Executive Officer of Recyclico. Our conversation took place on November 10th. I'm Jim Goddard.
Comments made on Company Showcase are an expression of opinion only and should not be construed in any manner whatsoever as recommendations to buy or sell any financial instrument at any time. Archived online at HowStreet.com. Company Showcase is a production of How Street Media Incorporated.